I'm John Batson with my colleague and friend Gregory Copley of Defense and Foreign Affairs, just back from his native Australia. Reuters, President Xi Jinping will gather more than 20 world leaders in a regional security forum in China on the 31st and the 1st, the beginning of September. Shanghai Cooperation Organization, held in the north port city of Tianjin. In attendance will be Mr. Putin, Mr. Modi, and of Xi Jinping as the host. Other nations attending will include Iran, we can be certain. This looks to Reuters to be bolstering Putin, does it, to show up in Tianjin?
Well, the reality is that the Shanghai Cooperation Organization coming together for its annual meeting in Tianjin starting August 31st and running till the next day is going nowhere. As an organization, its membership is largely mutually hostile and wary of each other. Certainly, there's a strong friendship between President Putin and Prime Minister Modi, but that doesn't extend to the PRC. As far as Beijing is concerned, it was obliged to host this, which I think it's well, the Communist Party of China welcomes. They're obliged to have Xi Jinping, who is still nominally the president of the PRC and general secretary of the party, to be there, even though he is on a strict leash and is really no longer making decisions in Beijing. But it looks good. They have to have this conference. As with the BRICS forum, which includes a lot of SCO members, it's going nowhere. It has no real cohesion, no mutual solidarity, in fact. SCO, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, was supposed to be an organization which supported each other militarily. That's not happening. So this is a showcase. It's not meant to make any major decisions. It will not do anything serious in terms of policy for either Putin, Modi, or for Xi Jinping, although Xi Jinping is grasping at all straws to continue to look relevant, despite the fact that he's now effectively unable to make decisions.
I have read, Gregory, that there are two things to worry about whenever these adversaries come together. One is that Kyiv must prevail in the war in Ukraine-Russia. Kyiv must not fall. No matter what's left of the country, it must exist as a country. One fear. The other fear is on the other side of the fence, that Russia must not fail to the point that it becomes a client state of China. That second part is what interests me. Is Russia aware that it is vulnerable to Chinese influence and domination? And are the Chinese intending to make Russia a client?
Well, I think the Communist Party of China, including Xi Jinping when he was effectively in power, were always keen to subordinate Russia and make it the junior partner. That is no longer, I believe, the case. I believe that Russia has re-earned not only its independence from Moscow, but its leadership in the Sino-Russian relationship. Russia is the one providing the PRC with energy, food, and many of the other technological attributes which the PRC needs for its security and computer operations and the like, and space operations particularly. So I believe that the PRC now needs Russia more than Russia needs the PRC. That's the bottom line. Yes, I think that everybody needs the war with Ukraine to go on, not Russia necessarily, but China does, because as long as the war goes on, Russia is isolated from the world and must trade with the PRC, selling food and agricultural commodities and energy at below market prices. So it behooves China to see this war continuing. I think, yes, there are many in the West who say that Kyiv must not fail and that Ukraine must continue to survive. But I think even the Russian government and President Putin doesn't have a problem with that. In fact, all he wants is for the rump of Ukraine to be at least neutral in that region and not be used as an excuse to revitalize NATO as an anti-Russian force, which we thought was that NATO's original mission, which was against the Soviet Union and the Warsaw Treaty Organization. We thought that had all gone, and the Russians had hoped so, and that Russia, in fact, even offered to join Western trading and security blocs just to integrate the region. But many in the West refused to allow that to happen. So essentially, you've got a situation where there's no problem for Russia in allowing Ukraine to continue to exist as long as it's not formally a part of NATO, and that there's no necessarily ability by Kiev to induce NATO into an anti-Russian stance in the long term.
Russia has responded to the request by the United States, Mr. Trump, for a bilateral, trilateral meeting, saying, no, not yet, we're not ready to meet with Zelensky. At the same time, Russia has advanced the idea that China and even France should be part of the decision-making process, not a bilateral or trilateral. I note that Russia is advancing the idea of the United Nations Security Council being in charge of the resolution of the conflict in Ukraine. Does that suit China? I know it suits Russia, but does it suit China to be at the table making those decisions?
Well, I think so, because it's largely, this is, if you like, the theatrical side of the conflict resolution.
Right.
I think for Moscow and Beijing, even the United States, having a whitewash of the situation, declaring an end to the war is convenient. It doesn't necessarily resolve the underlying process. And we have to remember that every time, I repeat, every time since 1945, that the United States has been in, the United Nations, rather, has been involved in so-called conflict resolution, it has failed. It has resulted in a number of frozen conflicts around the world, such as the Korean War, for example. These wars have not ended. They have merely been frozen, and the populations of both sides of those conflicts in the conflict areas have been left unable to move ahead with their lives. The situation has never been resolved one way or another with a victor and a loser or an amicable peace. It's only been frozen conflict. So if the United Nations gets involved in this, it is likely to be just one of those whitewashes, which will end with a resolution, if you like, of which will result in no clearly defined borders for Ukraine on its eastern front with Russia. And that may work out very well. And as we've discussed before, there are a number of countries in the world whose borders are not clearly defined, whether it's in South Africa or in some Latin American countries.
Let's go to Europe. Gregory Copley, Defense and Foreign Affairs, just back from his native Australia.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.